He required the aid of icebergs detached from the glaciers to account for certain superficial phenomena, but he confidently maintained that aqueous detrital conditions will best account for the great diffusion of drift over the surface of the globe, and at the same time explain the very general striation and abrasion of the rocks, at low as well as high levels, in numerous parallels of latitude. In his later years, Murchison, without retracting any of his observations and conclusions made in Russia, admitted in a letter to Agassiz that he regretted his early opposition to the Ice Age theory. On the other hand, marine deposits of recent age were found in large areas of European and Asiatic Russia. In the Caspian Sea, which stretches between southern Russia and Persia, live seals related to the seals of the Arctic Ocean. It is concluded that the polar sea spread and established a connection with the Caspian Sea, and this in recent time. Since the ice withdrew, the Arctic Ocean has spread over large areas of northern Russia and in many places has left marine deposits on the glacial drift as well as on the firmer rocks. The Arctic water spread also over the Obi Basin far to the south and established connections with the Caspian Sea, at which time the progenitors of the present seals of the Caspian Rocky Islands migrated thither to become stranded when the waters withdrew. Ice Age in the Tropics. In 1865, Agassiz went to equatorial Brazil, one of the hottest places in the world, where he found all the signs he ascribed to the action of ice. Now even those who had previously agreed with him became distressed. An ice covers in the tropics, on the very equator? There were drift accumulations, and scratched rocks, and erratic boulders, and fluted valleys, and the smooth surface of tillite, rock formed of consolidated till, so there must have been ice to carry and polish, and the region must have gone through an ice period. What could have caused a tropical region to be covered by ice several thousand feet thick? Abundant vestiges of an ice age were likewise found in British Guiana, another of the hottest places on Earth. Soon the same word came from equatorial Africa, and what appeared even more strange, the marks there indicated not only that equatorial Africa and Madagascar had been under a sheet of ice but that the ice had moved, spreading from the equator toward the higher latitudes of the southern hemisphere, or in the wrong direction. Then vestiges of an ice age were discovered in India, and there, too, the ice had moved from the equator, and not merely towards higher latitudes, but uphill, from the lowland up the foothills of the Himalayas. On reconsideration, the vestiges of ice in equatorial regions were ascribed to a different ice age that had taken place not thousands but many millions of years ago. Today the glacial phenomena in the tropics and in the southern hemisphere are ascribed, in the main, to the Permian Age, a much earlier period than the recent Ice Age. The most remarkable feature of the Permian glaciation is its distribution, writes C.O. Dunbar of Yale University. South America bears evidence of glaciation in Argentina and southeastern Brazil, even within 10 degrees of the equator. In the northern hemisphere, peninsular India, within 20 degrees of the equator, was the chief scene of glaciation, with the ice flowing north, or from the tropics to higher latitudes. Footnote. The ice cap covered practically all of southern Africa up to at least latitude 22 degrees S and also spread to Madagascar. Even if the phenomenon took place very long ago, an ice cover thousands of feet thick in the hottest places of the world is a challenging enigma. R. T. Chamberlain says, some of these huge ice sheets advanced even into the tropics, where the deposits of glacier-borne debris, hundreds of feet in thickness, amaze the geologists who see them. No satisfactory explanation has yet been offered for the extent and location of these extraordinary glaciers. Glaciers, almost unbelievable because of their location and size, certainly did not form in deserts. Greenland. Greenland is the contemporary example of what, according to the Ice Age theory, happened to a large part of the world in times past. Greenland belongs to the great archipelago that crowns northeastern Canada, though it is sometimes regarded as a part of Europe. It is the largest island in the world, if we consider Antarctica and Australia as continents. The island is 1,660 miles long, largely within the Arctic Circle, reaching the northern latitude of 83. Of its 840,000 square miles of surface, over 700,000 are covered with an immense mountain of ice that leaves free only the coastal fringes. The thickness of the ice is measured by listening to the echo that comes from the bedrock when a detonation is set off on top of the ice. It is found to be over 6,000 feet thick. For a long time, it was the belief of many that a large region in the interior of Greenland was free from ice, and was perhaps inhabited. It was in part to solve this problem that Baron Nordensk Jold set out upon his expedition of 1883. One, he ascended the ice cap from Disko Bay, latitude 69 degrees, and went eastward for 18 days across the ice field. Rivers were flowing in channels upon the surface like those cut on land. Only that the pure blue of the ice walls were, by comparison, infinitely more beautiful. These rivers were not, however, perfectly continuous. After flowing for a distance in channels on the surface, they, one and all, plunged with deafening roar into some yawning crevasse, to find their way to the sea through sub-glacial channels. Numerous lakes with shores of ice were also encountered. On bending down the ear to the ice, wrote the explorer, we could hear on every side a peculiar subterranean hum, proceeding from rivers flowing within the ice, and occasionally a loud single report like that of a cannon gave notice of the formation of a new glacier, cleft. In the afternoon we saw at some distance from us a well-defined pillar of mist which, when we approached it, appeared to rise from a bottomless abyss, into which a mighty glacier, river fell. The vast roaring water, mass had bored for itself a vertical hole, probably down to the rock, certainly more than 2,000 feet beneath, on which the glacier rested. The Ice Age survived in Greenland. This Arctic island reveals how vast continental areas looked in the past. However, it does not explain how ice could have covered British Guiana or Madagascar in the tropics. And what is no less surprising, the northern part of Greenland, according to the concerted opinion of glaciologists, was never glaciated. Probably, then as now, an exception was the northernmost part of Greenland, for it seems a rule that the most northerly lands are not, and never were, glaciated, writes the polar explorer Vilhjálmur Stefánsson. The islands of the Arctic archipelago, writes another scientist, were never glaciated. Neither was the interior of Alaska. It is a remarkable fact that no ice mass covered the lowlands of northern Siberia any more than those of Alaska, wrote James D. Dana, the leading American geologist of the last century. 5. And northern Siberia and on polar islands in the Arctic Ocean, spires of rock were observed that would certainly have been broken off if an ice cover had moved over those parts. Bones of Greenland reindeer have been found in southern New Jersey and southern France, and bones of Lapland reindeer in the Crimea. This was explained as due to the invasion of ice and the retreat of northern animals to the south. The hippopotamus was found in France and England and the lion in Alaska. To explain similar occurrences, an interglacial period was introduced into the scheme. The land was warmed up and the southern animals visited northern latitudes. And since the change from one fauna to another took place repeatedly, four glacial periods with three interglacial were generally counted, though the number of periods is not consistent with all lands or with all investigators. But why the polar lands were not glaciated during the Ice Age was never explained. Greenland presents still another enigma in the preceding formations, those of the Tertiary Age. In the 1860s, O. Geer of Zurich published his classical work on the fossil plants of the Arctic. He identified the plant remains of the northern parts of Greenland as magnolia and fig trees, among other species. Forests of exotic trees and groves of juicy subtropical plants grew in the land that lies deep in the cold Arctic and is immersed yearly in a continuous polar night of 6 months' duration. Coddis of the polar regions. Spitsbergen in the Arctic Ocean is as far north from Oslo in Norway as Oslo is from Naples. Here identified 136 species of fossil plants from Spitsbergen, 78 north latitude, which he ascribed to the Tertiary Age. Among the plants were pines, firs, spruces, and cypresses, also elms, hazels, and water lilies. At the northernmost tip of Spitsbergen Archipelago, A bed of black and lustrous coal 25 to 30 feet thick was found. It is covered with black shale and sandstone encrusted with fossilized land plants. When we remember that this vegetation grew luxuriantly within 8 degrees 15 of the North Pole, in a region which is in darkness for half of the year and is now almost continuously buried under snow and ice, we can realize the difficulty of the problem in the distribution of climate which these facts present to the geologist. There must have been great forests on Spitsbergen to produce a bed of coal 30 feet thick. And even if Spitsbergen, almost 1,000 miles inside the Arctic Circle, for some unknown reason had the warm climate of the French Riviera on the Mediterranean, still these thick forests could not have grown there, because the place is 6 months in continuous night. The rest of the year the sun stands low over the horizon. Not only fossil trees and coal but corals, too, were found there. Corals grow only in tropical water. In the Mediterranean, in the climate of Egypt or Morocco, it is too cold for them. But they grew in Spitsbergen. Today large formations of coral covered with snow can be seen. It does not solve the problem of their deposition, if they were formed in an older geological epoch. At some time in the remote past corals grew and are still found on the entire fringe of polar North America, in Alaska, Canada, and Greenland. Too in later times, tertiary, fig palms bloomed within the Arctic Circle, forests of Sequoia gigantea, the giant tree of California, grew from Bering Strait to north of Labrador. It is difficult to imagine any possible conditions of climate in which these plants could grow so near the pole, deprived of sunlight for many months of the year. It is usually said that in ages past the climate all over the world was the same, or that a characteristic of the warm periods which have formed the major part of geological tune was the small temperature difference between equatorial and polar regions. To this C. E. P. Brooks, in his book, Climate Through the Ages, says, so long as the axis of rotation remains in nearly its present position relative to the plane of the Earth's orbit around the Sun, the outer limit of the atmosphere in tropical regions must receive more of the Sun's heat than, in, the middle latitudes, and, in, the middle latitudes more than, in, the polar regions. This is an invariable law. It is much more difficult to think of a cause which will raise the temperature of polar regions by some 30°F or more, while leaving that of equatorial regions almost unchanged. The continent of Antarctica is larger than Europe, European Russia included. It has not a single tree, not a single bush, not a single blade of grass. Very few fungi have been found. Reports of polar explorers indicate that no land animals larger than insects have been seen, and these insects are exceedingly few and degenerate. Penguins and seagulls come from the sea. Storms of great velocity circle the Antarctic most of the year. The greatest part of the continent is covered with ice that in some places descends into the ocean. E. H. Shackleton, during his expedition to Antarctica in 1907-9, found fossil wood in the sandstone of a moraine at latitude 85 degrees 5. He also found erratic boulders of granite on the slopes of Mount Erebus, a volcano. Then he discovered 7 seams of coal, also at about latitude 85 degrees. The seams are each between 3 and 7 feet thick. Associated with the coal is sandstone containing coniferous wood. Antarctica, too, must have had great forests in the past. It often appears that the historian of climate has chosen a field as hard to master as it is to square the circle. It seems sometimes that the history of climate is a collection of unsolved, even unsolvable, questions. Without drastic changes in the position of the terrestrial axis or in the form of the orbit or both, conditions could not have existed in which tropical plants flourished in polar regions. If anyone is not convinced of this, he should try to cultivate coral at the North Pole. Whales in the mountains. In bogs covering glacial deposits in Michigan, skeletons of 2 whales were discovered. Whales are marine animals. How did they come to Michigan in the post-glacial epoch? Whales do not travel by land. Glaciers do not carry whales, and the ice sheet would not have brought them to the middle of a continent. Besides, The whale bones were found in post-glacial deposits. Was there a sea in Michigan after the glacial epoch, only a few thousand years ago? In order to account for whales in Michigan, it was conjectured that in the post-glacial epoch the Great Lakes were part of an arm of the sea. At present the surface of Lake Michigan is 582 feet above sea level. Bones of whale have been found 440 feet above sea level, north of Lake Ontario. A skeleton of another whale was discovered in Vermont, more than 500 feet above sea level ; one and still another in the Montreal, Quebec area, about 600 feet above sea level. Although the humphrey whale and beluga occasionally enter the mouth of the St. Lawrence, they do not climb hills. Zoo account for the presence of whales in the hills of Mont and Montreal, at elevations of 500 and 600 feet, requires the lowering of the land to that extent. Another solution would be for an ocean tide, carrying the whales, to have trespassed upon the land. In either case, Herculean force would have been required to push mountains below sea level or to cause the sea to erupt, but the latter explanation is clearly catastrophic. Therefore, the accepted theory is that the land in the region of Montreal and Vermont was depressed more than 600 feet by the weight of ice and kept in this position for a while after the ice melted. But along the coast of Nova Scotia and New England, stumps of trees stand in water, telling of once forested country that became submerged. And opposite the mouths of the St. Lawrence and the Hudson rivers, a deep canyon stretching for hundreds of miles into the ocean. These indicate that the land became sea, being depressed in post-glacial times. Then did both processes go on simultaneously, in neighboring areas, here up, there down? A species of tertiary whale, Zerglodon, left its bones in great numbers in Alabama and other Gulf states. The bones of these creatures covered the fields in such abundance and were so much of a nuisance on the top of the ground that the farmers piled them up to make fences. There was no ice cover in the Gulf states. Then what had caused the submergence and emergence of the land there? The ocean coast, not only of the area covered by ice, but all the way from Maine to Florida, was at one time submerged and then uplifted. Reginald A. Daly of Harvard wrote, "Not long ago, in a geological sense, the flat plain from New Jersey to Florida was under the sea. At that time the ocean surf broke directly on the old Appalachian Mountains. The wedge, like massive marine sediments, was then uplifted and cut into by rivers, giving the Atlantic coastal plain of the United States. Why was it uplifted? To the westward are the Appalachians." The geologist tells us of the stressful times when a belt of rocks, extending from Alabama to Newfoundland, was jammed, crumpled, thrust together, to make this mountain system. Why? How was it done? In former times the sea flooded the region of the Great Plains from Mexico to Alaska, and then withdrew. Why this change? In Georgia, marine deposits occur at altitudes of 160 feet and in northern Florida at altitudes of at least 240 feet. Walrus is found in Georgian deposits. Pleistocene, Ice Age, marine features are present along the Gulf Coast east of the Mississippi River, in some places at altitudes that may exceed 200 feet. In Texas, mammalian land animals of the Ice Age are found in marine deposits. These areas were not covered by the ice which, advancing from the north, reached only as far as Pennsylvania. A marine deposit overlies the seaboard of northeastern states and the Arctic coast of Canada. In this deposit walrus, seals and at least five genera of whales are found. Marine deposits of land identified with both glacial and interglacial ages, or containing animals of Arctic and of temperate latitudes, exist along both Arctic and Pacific coasts in places extending more than 200 miles inland. The change in land elevation in the region previously covered by ice is ascribed to the removal of the ice cover that weighed down the Earth's crust, but what changed the elevation of other areas outside the ice cover? If the land slowly rose when freed from ice and carried the bones of whales to the summits of hills, why did the neighboring land subside miles deep, as the undersea canyons indicate? Daly concluded, "The Pleistocene history of North America holds 10 major mysteries for every one that has already been solved." Chapter 5, Tidal Wave. Fissures in the Rocks. Joseph Prestwich, Professor of Geology at Oxford, 1874-88, and acknowledged authority on the Quaternary, Glacial and Recent, Age in England, was struck by numerous phenomena, all of which led him to the belief that the south of England had been submerged to the depth of not less than about 1,000 feet between the glacial, or post-glacial, and the recent or Neolithic, late stone periods. In a spasmodic movement of the terrain, the coast and the land masses of southern England were submerged to such a depth that points 1,000 feet high were below sea level. A most striking phenomenon among those observed by Prestwich was in the fissures in the rocks. In the neighbourhood of Plymouth on the Channel, clefts of various widths in limestone formations are filled with rock fragments, angular and sharp, and with bones of animals, mammoth, hippopotamus, rhinoceros, horse, polar bear, bison. The bones are broken into innumerable fragments. No skeleton is found entire. The separate bones, in fact, have been dispersed in the most irregular manner, and without any bearing to their relative position in the skeleton. Neither do they show wear, nor have they been gnawed by beasts of prey, though they occur with the bones of hyena, wolf, bear and honourable in other places in Devonshire and also in Pembrokeshire in Wales. Vociferous breccias or conglomerates of broken bones and stones in fissures in limestone consist of angular rock fragments and broken and splintered bones with sharp fractured edges in a fresh state, and in splendid condition, showing no traces of gnawing. If the crevices were pitfalls into which the animals fell alive, then some of the skeletons would have been preserved entire. But this is never the case. Again, if left for a time exposed in the fissures, the bones would be variously weathered, which they are not. Nor would the mere fall have been sufficient to have caused the extensive breakage the bones have undergone. These, I consider, are fatal objections to this explanation, and none other has since been offered, wrote Prestwich. Fissures in the rocks, not only in England and Wales, but all over Western Europe, are choked with bones of animals, some of extinct races, others, though of the same age, of races still surviving. Osseous breccia in the valleys around Paris have been described, as well as fissures in the rocks on the tops of isolated hills in central France. They contain remnants of mammoth, woolly rhinoceros, and other animals. These hills are often of considerable height. One very striking example is found near Semmer in Burgundy, a hill, Montana Gen, 1,430 feet high, is capped by a breccia containing remains of mammoth, reindeer, horse, and other animals. In the rock on the summit of Montana de Sautne, a flat, topped hill near Chalon, Zur, Sadney between Dijon and Lyon, there is a fissure filled with animal bones. Why should so many wolves, bears, horses, and oxen have ascended a hill isolated on all sides? Asked Albert Godfrey, professor at the Jardin des Plantes. According to him, the bones in this cleft are mostly broken and splintered into innumerable sharp fragments and are evidently not those of animals devoured by beasts of prey, nor have they been broken by man. Nevertheless, the remains of wolf were particularly abundant, together with those of cave lion, bear, rhinoceros, horse, ox, and deer. It is not possible to suppose that animals of such different natures, and of such different habitats, would in life ever have been together. Yet the state of preservation of the bones indicates that the animals, all of them, perished in the same period of time. Prestwich thought that the animal bones, now associated in the fissure on the summit of the hill, were found in common heaps because, we may suppose, all these animals had fled, there, to escape their rising waters. On the Mediterranean coast of France there are numerous clefts in the rocks crammed to overflowing with animal bones. Marcel de Saez wrote in his survey of the Montagne de Pedma in the Department of Gard, "It is within this limited area that the strange phenomenon has happened of the accumulation of a large quantity of bones of diverse animals in hollows or fissures." De Saez found the bones all broken into fragments, but neither gnawed nor rolled. No coprolites, hardened animal faces, were found, indicating that the dead beasts had not lived in these hollows or fissures. The Rock of Gibraltar is intersected by numerous crevices filled with bones. The bones are broken and splintered. The remains of panther, lynx, gaffier, cat, hyena, wolf, bear, rhinoceros, horse, wild boar, red deer, fallow deer, ibex, ox, hare, rabbit, have been found in these ossiferous fissures. The bones are most likely broken into thousands of fragments, none are worn or rolled, nor any of them gnawed, though so many carnivores then lived on the rock, says Prestwich, adding, a great and common danger, such as a great flood, alone could have driven together the animals of the plains and of the crags and caves. The rock is extensively faulted and fissured. Beaches high on Gibraltar show that the expression that makes of this rock the symbol of immovability is unfounded. These beaches indicate that at some time the waters of the sea lapped the rock at the 600-foot mark. The rock now rises over 1,370 feet above the sea. It was therefore, in quaternary times, or the age of man, an island not more than about 800 feet, or less high, which rose by successive stages to its present height. It is more than probable, however, that at some time before it settled at that level, the whole of the area was upheaved to such an extent that a land passage was formed to the African coast. A human molar and some flints worked by Paleolithic, old stone, man, as well as broken pieces of pottery of Neolithic, recent or polished stone, man, were discovered among the Anwell bones in some of the crevices of the rock. On Corsica, Sardinia, and Sicily, as on the continent of Europe and the British Isles, the broken bones of animals choke the fissures in the rocks. The hills around Palermo in Sicily disclosed an extraordinary quantity of bones of hippopotami, incomplete hecatombs. 20 tons of these bones were shipped from around the one cave of San Siro, near Palermo, within the first 6 months of exploiting them, and they were so fresh that they were sent to Marseille to furnish animal charcoal for use in the sugar factories. How could this bone breccia have been accumulated? No predaceous animals could have brought together and left such a collection of bones. No teeth marks of hyena or of any other animal are found in this osseous mass. Did the animals come there to die as old age approached? The bones are those of animals of all ages down to the foetus, nor do they show traces of weathering or exposure. The extremely fresh condition of the bones, proved by the retention of so large a proportion of animal matter, shows that the event was, geologically, comparatively recent, and the fact that animals of all ages were involved in the catastrophe shows it to have been sudden. Prestwich was of the opinion that, together with Central Europe and England, the Mediterranean islands, Corsica, Sardinia, and Sicily, had been submerged. The animals in the plain of Palermo naturally retreated, as the waters advanced, deeper into the amphitheatre of hills until they found themselves embayed. The animals must have thronged together in vast multitudes, crushing into the more accessible caves, and swarming over the ground at their entrance, until overtaken by the waters and destroyed. Rocky debris and large blocks from the sides of the hills were hurled down by the current of water, crushing and smashing the bones. Prestwich, who subscribed to the Ice Age theory and is regarded as the foremost authority on the geology of the Ice Age in England, was compelled to construct a theory of submergence of Western Europe and of the Mediterranean coasts at the close of the glacial or so, called post-glacial period, and immediately preceding the Neolithic or recent period, which quotation was the title of a paper read by him before the Royal Society of London. It was published in the Society's Philosophical Transactions. It became clear to Prestwich that it was impossible to account for the specific geological phenomena, by any agency of which our time has offered us experience. The agency, whatever it was, must have acted with sufficient violence to smash the bones. Nor could this have been the work of a long time, for the entombed bones, though much broken, are singularly fresh. Certain communities of early man must have suffered in the general catastrophe. The rock of Gibraltar rose to close the strait, then sank down partway. The coast of England and even hills 1,000 feet high were submerged, the island of Sicily was inundated, as were elevations in the interior of France. Everywhere the evidence betokens a catastrophe that occurred in not too remote times and engulfed an area of at least continental dimensions. Great avalanches of water loaded with stones were hurled on the land, shattering massifs, and searching out the fissures among the rocks, rushed through them, breaking and smashing every animal in their way. In Press Witch's opinion, the cause of the catastrophe was the sinking of the continent and its subsequent elevation, which was sudden, and during which water from the heights broke upon lower levels, bringing chaos and destruction. Press Witch suspected that the area involved must have been much larger than that discussed in his works.